Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is Dirk Ulrich, creator of the Plugin Alliance and Brainworks. But first, there's some good news in the music business. The music business is actually growing, and it's growing at a pretty good pace so far this year. Global revenue is up 3.2%. And in the U.S., it's up 8.1%, believe it or not. So this is really good news, and it's all according to the RIAA. So where is this increase coming from? Well, as everyone has predicted, streaming. And yes, it's because so far there's a lot more people that are subscribing to streaming, just the way everyone thought it would be, but it happened a little slower than everybody thought. Worldwide, there's about 85 million streaming service subscribers. And of course, the prediction was, once we got to 100 million, that would kind of ease the burden on the music business and we'd kind of be back in the good times again. And it certainly looks like we're getting there. Certainly the revenue is about half of what it was at the height of the music business. But again, it looks like there's lots of room for growth here in streaming and there are new deals being made. And it looks in general like things are just getting better in the whole music industry, which, wow, we thought we'd never say that. If you look at Spotify, Spotify has 40 million paying subscribers so far. And Apple, who's only been in business for about a year with Apple Music, they have 17 so far. So even though they're a distant second, don't forget, it took Spotify a good 10 years to get to 40 million and it only took Apple a year to get to 17. So it looks like there's lots of room for growth. It's good news for the music business and everybody in it. The pie is definitely getting bigger. We've bottomed out, so to speak, and we're on the way back up. And this is good news for everybody. If you have any questions or comments, send them to questions at bobbyoinnercircle.com. Don't forget to check out my 101 Mixing Tricks program and my other online video courses at bobbyosinskicourses.com. You can also check out my music industry and music production blogs. Just go to bobbyosinski.com to find the links, and there you can also read excerpts from my books. A couple of interesting things on the music manufacturing side of things. Two big companies that we all know about, we all have heard about for years and years, have been acquired. One is DTS. DTS was acquired by Tessera Technologies for about $850 million. And Tessera is a semiconductor packaging company. So they started packaging and bonding semiconductors, and eventually they got into imaging. So DTS looks like it's a pretty good fit here. We still don't know what's going to happen with the people. It looks like there won't be any layoffs. We don't know what will happen with the DTS name. Still too early. But the good news is so far there's been no layoffs and it looks like things are going on for anybody who's using DTS. It doesn't look like there's going to be a problem in the future. The other company is THX. And we've all seen THX when we've gone to the movies. THX stands for Tom Holman Experiment. Tom Holman is my mentor in surround sound. He's also the originator of 5.1, the whole concept behind 5.1. Tom used to be the chief scientist for George Lucas, for Lucasfilm. And one of the problems that George Lucas had after the early Star Wars success is the fact that they do this great job of mixing a film, and then they would send it off to theaters around the world, and it would sound horrible. And the reason why was there was no standardization in playback systems in movie theaters. They had what's called the X-curve, but it was really outdated. It was from the 20s. So Tom tried to make a standard, and he did. He wound up making it THX. And it was a standard for playback systems in movie theaters. So whatever it sounded like in the dubbing stage, it would sound like in whatever theater that you went that employed THX. And THX was a way of tuning the speakers, and it was also a whole set of speakers and amplifiers and just a whole playback chain that would be standardized from theater to theater. Now, Tom never made a dime out of this, believe it or not. All of the money went to Lucas. And that's one of the things that's been totally unfair because Tom never really got the recognition for this. THX eventually spun off and tried to go consumer. And they try to do the same thing with home hi-fi systems, home theater systems, even studios, home studios. But that never really caught on. So eventually, after all the theaters had kind of been saturated with THX, there is no place else to go. And THX has been kind of running on fumes for a long time. So the company has recently been bought by the gaming peripheral manufacturer Razer. THX will still remain independent, at least for the time being. And all the employees are going to stay, which, once again, it's a really good thing. It looks like THX will be used in gaming. Now, when you think about it, this is the perfect environment for THX or for some playback standardization. So if I had to bet, I would think that at some point in time, we're going to see a THX or THX-like environment for the gaming system. So anyway, there we go. Two big names in audio have now been purchased, and we'll see what happens in the future, if the names will pass into history or they'll continue as is. My guest today is founder of the plugin company Brainworks and the Plugin Alliance, and that's Dirk Ulrich. Dirk was a successful studio owner and producer when an idea for a piece of outboard gear turned into an extremely popular plugin and launched him into the world of music software. I spoke with Dirk via Skype from his office in Germany. You have quite an interesting past before you got into the plugin world. So let's go back to when you first got into music, because I understand that that wasn't your first choice, right?
Music wasn't my first choice?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it was my hobby and my passion when I was a teenager still. And then I decided to do some regular education, though, and I started even studying law in Cologne, in Germany. But at the same time, I also, because I was playing in a band and I started recording my own stuff and I had a little demo studio, I started recording friends' bands. So at that time, I decided to actually go all in and start a studio and even a little label at that time, little publishing company. And yeah, so ever since I was, I think, 24 or so, I've been doing music, basically.
You had quite a lot of success in the studio business, didn't you, with your own studio and then in production?
Yeah, I started producing all the local punk and metal and rock bands at that time, and people seemed to dig my guitar sounds especially, and that was probably because I was a guitar player myself. And yeah, then we started this little label, and we started working with some national and even international acts. Yeah, I produced with James Labrie from Dream Theater, for example, and I produced metal bands like Propane, which is a pretty famous band, and some other bands. Also commercials, all kinds of stuff. I mean, basically what every studio does to survive. And there were a few highs in between, right?
Well, you mentioned that people like your guitar sounds. Did you have a secret? Was there anything special that you did?
Not really. I mean, because first of all, I never learned this really. I just got into it from playing and then from trying it out. And I had a few friends of mine who had a little bit of experience and some local studios that I've been recording before. But basically, it was always about an SM57 and a preamp and a nice guitar amp and cap, and how to place the microphone, I guess, was very important. This is still an experience that helps me a lot today when we do the impulse response capturing for our guitar amp plugins. It's still the same thing. I mean, we take like up to 12 microphones, not only SM57 now, but also Neumann microphones and whatever we think is appropriate for that amp and the cap selection we used. And then it's like 2 days of sound check, really. It's like when we have one sound that sounds nice, we run the sweep and we record it and capture it, and then it's up to the next one, so.
Well, I guess being a guitar player, you know how to dial in sounds as well. You know what sounds good to you. So a lot of it is dialing in the amplifier and whatever effects you have or pedals you have before it. So that's an important part of the whole sound as well.
Yes, and it, in when it comes to our plug-in amps, it really helps that Igor, the guy who's modeling the amps, is an extremely good guitar player, and he has a lot of experience. So between him modeling the amp to a degree where if you play the plug-in amp through a real power amp and a real cabinet, it feels basically and sounds like playing a real amp. And me taking over from there to place the microphones, and I have this nice Neve console in my studio, which I'm using for all that work, to capture the right microphone settings and EQ settings and all that stuff. I think that's the the secret, the two combinations maybe of the secret that work.
So how did you get into plugins then? Because it seems like a pretty big jump to go from being a producer, owning your studio, and then all of a sudden being in software.
Yeah, it was almost coincidental because I wanted to, I went to a big mastering studio in Germany, the 301 studios at that time, who owned the SAE schools also, at that time at least. And I gave the guys my master and he pressed a few buttons and all in a sudden, all I heard was the cymbals and the reverb and the guitars, all the stereo information. And I've never seen or heard about the MS technology at that time. So I talked to the guy and I found out what they were doing. They were pretty much using a standard left and right stereo EQ with this MS matrix. And I was so impressed by this that I decided I wanted to have something like this for my own studio. And so I asked a friend of mine who has a repair store but also builds some equipment if he would be into it, making a stereo EQ that has a built-in MS matrix, and he loved the idea. So we started making a plan for building such an EQ. And another friend of mine who worked at Creamware at that time, which was a German company, I think they're out of business now, and they made I/O interfaces and a software system that comes along with it too. They had this SDK, which they were able to unlock for me, so I could have basically an empty plugin shelf, like a two-in, two-out configuration, and then I could build my own plugin inside of this with basically their filters and all the parts that you would need. And since I'm not a programmer and I'm also not a guy who could solder an EQ in analog, but I knew exactly what I wanted in terms of signal flow and how that MS thing worked. I studied then. I was able within a few weeks to come up with a basic prototype of what became the BX Digital later. And my friend at Creamware asked me a few weeks later, so what happened with this EQ idea that you have? And I sent him this, it's more like almost like sending him a session so he could try it out. And within 15 minutes, he called me back and said, wow, that's so amazing what you can do with this EQ. We should make a plugin together. We will help you finalize this and we will sell it on the Creamware platform. Would you be up for it? And I loved the idea, of course, because it was, like I said, not my intention to start a software business at that time. I just wanted my EQ to happen. And when it was done, they also asked me if I would go to NAMM with them to help them with their booth and to demo stuff. And I could also demo my own plugin. And working in a guitar store many years before, even when I was studying still on the weekends, I had heard about NAMM and knew how big it was and how important it was. So I decided, yeah, absolutely, I want to go there. And on the second day, I think, of this trade show, somebody from DigiDesign walked into the booth and said, wow, that's such a cool EQ. I have to talk to my boss. It's possible we want this for Pro Tools. So it really just happened at that time.
So you've had a long relationship with Avid then. Well, I guess it was Digi then, DigiDesign first and then Avid.
Yeah, I started when they were still DigiDesign and I... It's really funny. I mean, I tell Ed Gray, the director of third-party programs all the time, and I really mean this, that they pretty much started my software business because the Creamware thing, it was nice to have it, and it was great as a starting point, but we never made any money out of this because the platform was weak and there weren't just any sales happening. But when DigiDesign took over and actually offered me to put this EQ, although BrainWorks was not a famous brand at that time yet, to put it into one of their massive packs, this EQ plugin just took off by itself. I didn't even need like a marketing budget or to buy any ads or whatever. People just saw this EQ and heard it. One of the things that DigiDesign or Avid loved about it back then was that it has some auto solo features, and we made it to work with the icon controller. So when you grabbed a knob on the icon, it would switch into mid or side mode automatically. It would filter stuff and then solo it for you. And every trade show they went to, they invited me that I could basically have a station on their on their booth. And in the first 2 years, I think they didn't even charge me for this, but they really wanted to help me and make this EQ popular. Partly, I guess, because it helped to show off their controller, but also I really think they supported me as a young developer, which was awesome, of course.
No kidding. That's excellent. Many of your plugins are, most of them actually, MS is a big feature. And that's something that I think you stress, which is different than most other manufacturers and most other plugin developers, because that's usually an added-on feature. But for you, it seems like that's very primary. I suppose that goes back to your love for MS when you first heard it. And what I want to get at is, what did you hear that really pulled you in, that really sold you on Midside?
There were, it's true, what you say is true. And when I learned about the MS system and how you can make it work and how you can achieve it, I totally, I dove into it, or I got into it completely, and I experimented with it a lot, because at that time I was then starting to create plugins, and also during that time we then hired our first programmer, because with this massive pack from DigiDesign took off right away, and it brought us our first big check, especially compared to what I earned before with running my little studio. I mean, I made some money, I survived on it, but it was not that I produced number one hits, especially because I focused on rock and metal a lot. And for that kind of music, MS was actually unbelievable what you could do with it, like to separate, for example, bass drum and snare and vocals from guitars and stereo synths and effects and all that stuff, and then really widen these tracks. And maybe when you have a problem, let's say you have a singer in a master and some sibilance problems, you can fix the sibilance problems in the mid channel without making the whole mix dull. So you could boost high frequency still on guitars and cymbals and keyboards. And all that stuff was so impressive to me in the beginning that I really experimented a lot. And then I think it was just a natural thing. There wasn't a big business plan at that time to become the number one MS brand or something like this. I just had ideas. I definitely didn't want to just make a two-band or three-band EQ and claim that my high frequencies sound better than any other high frequencies. I was all about the features and the added value that you can have with this MS stuff. We then started, for example, with dynamic EQs in MS mode and little tools like VX Control, just for people to be able to chain other plugins into the MS mode, or even analog outboard. If you used your I/O card to chain a stereo EQ into your Pro Tools or Cubase system or whatever it is, then you were able to use this EQ in MS also without an external MS matrix, all that stuff. And people loved the idea, and I think we got a lot of write-ups also from magazines and really great reviews at that time, because there wasn't anything like it. And of course, there were tons of EQ plugins already and compressors, but there was just something new in our plugins. And so I guess that's why it took off and why people liked it.
What's your favorite MS trick?
It's actually, I think, one of the coolest plugins we made is a very easy plugin called BX Boom. And it uses MS technology to really make a bass drum jump out of a mix, if you want, without destroying the mix, though, in a really easy way. It's just a one knob plugin, and it's amazing, because it even works on a final master. I don't even need the individual tracks to do this, and this is one of the coolest tricks, I guess.
Yeah, that is very cool, definitely.
Sorry, little story. Yeah. I heard this one. I got invited by a live mixing engineer. He was mixing Supertramp at that time, and they played a soccer stadium near my hometown. And he said that was on a TDM venue system. He said he had a little issue or bug, or he wanted me to check what this plugin did. So he invited me to the show together with my girlfriend, who's now my wife. And we sat on a big case next to the mixing console in that soccer stadium. He said, check this out, I'm going to switch BX Boom off for a second. And the whole drum kit and the whole sound really collapsed in a way, especially on this huge speaker setup in a soccer stadium with subwoofers and I don't know how many thousands of watts they had. And for like a few seconds, he let it in bypass mode, and then when he switched it back on, it was such an awesome experience to hear what this thing does, this one little plugin, what it does to the whole sound basically of the band in that stadium. So that was pretty cool.
Well, how did you develop that? Just out of curiosity, so what was the impetus for development of this particular plugin?
We have one plugin that's called the BX Dyn-EQ, and it's a dynamic EQ. And it has a side chain, so to say, so you can trigger the actual EQ path with a certain part of a, like you can filter the signal and then apply some dynamic EQ based on what the trigger sees. And what we did was we have this cross feed system in there, so you could EQ the side channel, for example, based on what the mid channel reacts to or what it has, and vice versa also. So I found out that if I push away some of the side information in the mid range, whenever the bass drum hits, and then I boost some really low ends on the mid channel, it really brings the bass drum up front in a mix. Since we're making room for it more or less in the side information, it doesn't really disturb the mix, and so you don't need external side chaining, and it works great. But the basis for this was the BX Dyn-EQ, the bigger EQ, and basically BX Boom is one preset that you can achieve with BX Dyn-EQ, and we just reduced it to the threshold parameter, which is the bass drum in the GUI, and so you can't tweak it, you can't tweak the attack and release times and the frequency and all these details, which you could on the bigger plugin, but we put three different frequencies in that work most of the time, and then you can switch from low to high. And so it's a very easy to use plugin with a big impact, literally. So
let's go there for a second. Mm-hmm. How important is it to get the user interface right? And does simplicity sell, or do more features sell? What have you found?
I think it's both, but in between doesn't work great. We definitely, there are people who love plugins with 40 parameters and all the knobs you can tweak and the total geeks. And even our most successful plugin ever is BX Digital, the first one that we made. And since it's a two-channel EQ, and you need both channels if you want to EQ M and S individually, and then it has added features, it has like, I don't know, got to be like 50 parameters and knobs in this plugin, and it's very successful. It's not very easy to use for somebody who doesn't understand at least the basics of EQing and so you have to be a little bit experienced, I guess. But then on the other hand, we have plugins like BX Boom, or plugins we did with partner companies like SPL, the Transient Designer, which has just two knobs and it's very effective in what it does, or the de-essers from SPL. And those plugins are extremely successful too. So I think if you try to make a Transient Designer, but you need like 40 knobs to dial a sound in, that would probably not be very very successful. So I think getting the GUI right is absolutely essential. And also I think it has to look nice, or at least appealing to the people who are the potential users. I think there's a difference in maybe a heavy metal guitar amp plugin versus a mastering limiter plugin, for example. It will probably be different people using it to a degree. Of course, you will find the metal guy that also masters his own music, but if it's dedicated studios, then probably the mixing and mastering studios will look slightly different from the recording studios.
How did Plugin Alliance come about? Because first of all, you had Brainworks, and Brainworks was successful, but it's a jump to go to the Plugin Alliance. So what brought that about?
That's a good question. We, in probably in 2010 or even 2009, maybe, we started working with SPL. I knew some of the people there, and I had seen that Universal Audio released the Transient Designer plugin as a licensed plugin, but it was a Universal Audio development. And so I approached them and said, look, we're for 3-4 years now, we're selling plugins and we're doing great with it. And we have a really decent programmer. We established this the framework, which we're still using. And of course, we built upon it, which enables us to make plugins that work on Mac and PC and for all these different formats, including TDM at that time. So I proposed to them that we start a partnership and we would do SPL plugins, but we would actually make them for them or develop them for them, but we would sell them from the SPL website. So it's really official and it's their product. And they loved the idea, so we made that that partnership. We started that partnership, and when we saw that this is working great, we also signed Elysia and then Vertigo at that time, and we developed more and more partner plugins. And at some point, it just got really crazy because we were hosting 4 web stores now for Brainworks, for Elysia, for Vertigo, for SPL, and some of these web stores like the Elysia. The Vertigo had only 1 plugin, basically. So I had the idea it would be great if we could put all the plugins on 1 website. And at that time, also the iLog system got cracked. And so the copy protection and the licensing scheme, which we used, was really not in that great of a shape. And so Herman from SPL and I decided that, I mean, we were still selling plugins, although the iLog was cracked, so we weren't that afraid anymore that this was really the absolute key to it, and there was so much hassle with the system. So we decided to start that I would start Plugin Alliance, and we would develop our own licensing system, which the priority was to make it really easy for the user. You wouldn't need a dongle and all these things. And so this way, we were also legally allowed then to inform our users about releases from other brands. I mean, it was I couldn't just take my Brainworks newsletter at that time, or the list of that newsletter, and send them an email about new SPL plugins, although I even knew from users that they were actually very interested in it. I saw that on GearSlots because people found out that we were the guys behind those plugins. And so I think it was just an obvious idea to combine the plugins. And this, for me, was then the big chance. I've always been a big fan of the US. My grandfather took me to the United States when I was 11, I think, for the first time. He used to work with Ford when he was younger, and even in the US for a few years. And I've worked with companies like Mackie before on conventions. I demoed their gear to people. So I've always been a fan of the American marketing and all the coolness factor that a lot of those companies add to their product. So I thought it would be really great to establish this company in the US and try to find a few American people to help us, because basically everything we do, including this interview now, is in English. I mean, all the manuals, all the videos we do, when we talk to VIP artists like mix engineers or mastering engineers that want to use our plugins and then maybe want to have a direct connection to the company, everything is in English. So I thought it would be really great to start the company there, have our guys drive to Los Angeles once a month and do some video interviews and stuff like this. And we started this in 2012. We have an office in the US now since 2014. And so far it's been really great. I mean, we've added more partners, and we're working with more American partners also, like Millennia and other guys. So It came out of the need, or it started out of the need to combine all these plugins that we have had on one website, and we really didn't want to put it on the Brainworks website, because SPL, for example, said, yeah, it's cool to have one combined website, but we don't want this to be like the Brainworks SPL Transient Designer. We want it still to be the SPL Transient Designer, and I loved that idea because I think it's very credible. We work together with the partner companies closely. They help us even to finalize the plugins with listening sessions and shootouts. So that's good.
It's a brilliant idea. I thought that Plugin Alliance was a marketplace for third-party plugins, and I didn't realize that you were the developer for those. Are there any third-party plugins that you don't develop?
Yes, by now they are. In the beginning, it was basically Brainworks plugins, and then plus the plugins the Brainworks team developed for partners. But over time, we made our system available for other developers, especially the licensing system. And of course, we have a huge email list now where we can inform users. People love the idea that they can buy different plugins on our website and get discounts if they buy more than just one plugin, but they can select from different vendors. And companies like Unfiltered Audio and Lindell Audio, for example, they completely do their own development. And just when the plugin is finished, we give them our licensing technology, so they get the plugin alliance toolbar. And then we take over also for internal alpha testing, and we have an external beta team now of close to 100 people, I think, spread all over the world. Because when we started with Brainworks, we found a few really crazy bugs, like bugs that only happened when a user had a Japanese keyboard connected to their Pro Tools. And you can test all day long in Germany or in California, but you probably won't find that bug. So coming up with this external team was of course great. And it helps the third-party companies, of course, because they don't have to start their own beta team now with another 100 guys. And then we now have full-time employees who handle the beta team and a forum assigned connected with that system. And we have people running tech support and sales support and all kinds of stuff that we can now offer to all these developers who now can focus completely on developing cool plugins and don't have to deal with PayPal issues and credit card issues and licenses not being transferred or all that stuff.
Where do you see plugins heading? Is there a trend? In other words, is it maybe a user interface trend or the type of plugins, or is there a feature that, do you see plugins changing in any way?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 10 years now, and I've seen plugins develop quite a bit over that time. And of course, there will always be, I separate plugins into two basic categories for sure, and that's all the vintage-oriented stuff, like the emulations that we do and Universal Audio does and SoftTube does a lot of that stuff. And you need to have some real knowledge to do these plugins about analog stuff, and you have to be very efficient with coding. Otherwise, you can't implement all these features and filters and really do component-level modeling without ruining your CPU usage. So that's one big category. And then there's, of course, the other one that's the complete modern stuff, maybe on the front line of this without, we don't have anything to do with it, but stuff like Melodyne 4, for example, where you can, this is stuff you couldn't even do in analog. So they just came up with this idea and developed it over several years. And then maybe stuff that helps you to mix automated and then all these plugins that come out recently. So I think just like there are metal guys and hip hop guys and jazz guys, there will always be people who either love one or the other, or maybe even both. I mean, so like I like rock music, but also I like pop music. So it doesn't have to be exclusive. But I see a big trend, of course, with these high tech plugins, stuff that level your drums in a mix, for example, or all these crazy cool pitch related programs like Melodyne. But I also think there's still a lot of room for these emulations. And Brainworks is kind of in between. It's we use a lot of analog modeling, but then we also add some cutting edge new ideas, and even if it's just DMS and some other features. But so I see Brainworks somewhere in the middle of this development.
Yeah, from what I gather, you don't feel like you're locked into emulating a vintage piece. There are some developers that feel they have to get it just right, and it has to do what it used to do and nothing else. And you're not too precious with that. You feel as if, well, we'll do that, and plus we'll add some other things as well as the market needs, right?
Yes, I do, and also, for example, we modeled the Transient Designer, a native version of the Transient Designer, also some years ago, and it was very successful. But we just recently released the Transient Designer Plus, and because Herman and I went to a lot of trade shows together, we exchanged ideas. Herman is the co-owner and CEO of SPL, I should say. And then also users like Dave Pensado, for example, he approached us several times and said he had some ideas for how you could improve maybe the trends in design or add some functionality. And so we talked about this, and SPL was very open to the idea of making an original SPL Trends and Designer Plus plugin, which basically can do more things than the original hardware can do. And not every developer or not every hardware company would maybe be okay with that idea, but I think it's the right way for them to go, because SPL is definitely an innovative company. And maybe if you model a 9060 mastering Motown EQ or whatever it would be, maybe then it's fine to just leave it as it is, because it's like a holy piece of equipment maybe for some people. And I think, yeah, personally, I don't mind if I, for example, we modeled my Neve console recently, and we just had the idea. Every other console plugin out there models one golden channel, and then you can use the plugin as often as you want, but it still gives you 50 times the exact same channel, and that's just not true with a real console. So especially on stereo channels, even left and right mix or left and right signal will be on two different channels. So you will have some small phasing, and the center frequencies will not be completely aligned between left and right. And there will be different noise floor on different channels and all these details. So I had the, at that time, crazy idea to model all these tolerances. And when it was done and people actually freaked out how big of an improvement this is over using the same channel 50 times maybe in a mix, we now even have a patent pending for this technology. So this was all based on the idea that we would take what's there and improve on what's the norm maybe, or what's standard. And we even added some features to that console plugin, which I always wanted in my console, but it's just not in there, like a dry wet control for the compressor maybe. Being able to tweak the internal second threshold of that compressor to determine how much pumping I want, or maybe I don't want any pumping. So you can pretty much dial this in now. And I wanted the high pass and low pass filters to have a wider range forever, especially the high pass filters. I thought they were too limited with the 300 hertz or whatever it is. And so we just went ahead and did it, and this plugin is one of our most successful plugins ever. So that tells me that people out there like the idea and then will actually use it because it works for them. And
I haven't tried that one. Which one is it?
It's called BX Console.
Okay. It's a brilliant idea because, yes, you're right. There's a range of tolerances from channel to channel, and you never see that in other plugins. That's great.
No. If you take a snare channel, for example, a snare signal and boost high frequencies with a narrow Q, let's say 10 dB or 12 dB, something you wouldn't maybe do in a mix like this, but just to hear how big the difference is. And then you dial or you browse through all these different channels, because in the plugin you can go now from channel 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. You will hear the for example, the crosstalk of the hi-hat and the frequency going from shh. I mean, every channel sounds a little bit different really. And what we did is we had a suspicion that this was going on, and when people still say that, oh yeah, but an analog mix is always wider and bigger, doing all this MS stuff, I know that when you crank up the stereo width, which basically gives you phase problems if you overdo it, but people will tell you, oh, this sounds better because now it's wider and has more depth and 3D and whatever it is, I figured, okay, if you have a stereo channel and you have different center frequencies and maybe the gains of the EQs are a little bit different, but it goes further. Even the attack times and release times of compressors and gates are different. So the signal will not be reduced and boosted exactly at the same time, but maybe the whole mix just starts bouncing a little bit between left and right. And so we had this suspicion and we investigated. And then we found that there were 150 components in each channel that have an influence on either center frequencies, noise ratios, attack times, release times, all that stuff. So we we checked what all these either manufactory stated tolerances were, or we even measured them. And so we came up with this concept of basically applying all these tolerances to the plugin model. And then we put 72 different channels into that plugin, just because my board is also 72 channels. And it's actually very impressive when you have stereo channels and you like a stem mastering with 24 stereo pairs, and you mix them together. And when you switch from analog stereo mode to digital stereo mode, which would give you the same channels again, there's a huge difference. And it's exactly what people always say. It has less stereo width and less depth when you go back to the digital version. And so this whole tolerance thing seems to be a big part of what people love in their analog consoles. And which is funny, because the analog guys always try to reduce these tolerances to a minimum. Of course, they have hand-selected parts, and they charge you more because you're using 1% tolerances, resistors, and then all these just to try and minimize it to as much as they can. But you will never get rid of them.
Well, that's brilliant. I have to try that, because it sounds great. And I would think that it would change how the MS function works as well, because you have a lot of tolerances. And so the phase is going to be different, and that will mean that MS will work differently. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes. When we started, one of the reasons why BX Digital was so successful was that mastering guys actually loved the internal MS matrix, just because it was absolutely perfect. I mean, in digital, it's so easy. You combine left plus right is M, and left minus right is S, and that's a mathematical thing in the computer, of course, so it's absolutely accurate. And in analog, it's so hard to even build a totally accurate and perfect and phase coherent MS matrix. So I think when we started, this was one of the reasons why people loved this MS EQ. But with everybody still missing some of the cool features that analog gave you, like the warmth maybe, and even some of the saturation and distortion and noise and whatever it is. I think this is really one of the, when you asked about where are plugins going, we are now developing more console plugins, which will come out sometime in the future, with the same features basically as BX Console. BX Console is a Neve console emulations. Obviously, there are a few other consoles you could think about that would make sense for that people would want, and that would make sense for us to model, and who would also benefit from that patent pending feature now.
Last question for you. What is the best piece of music advice, or music business advice, or just straight business advice that you either learned along the way, or maybe somebody imparted to you?
Well, it's so funny, because when I was running my studio and also my little label and my publishing company, I was really trying to plan for success. And we had to borrow some money from a bank to buy a studio at that time, and we needed to give them business plans and all that stuff. And I always survived, but I never really made a lot of money. So the funny thing is that when I started something that I didn't even see as a business in the beginning, which was this plugin development, this was when it really started to take off. So maybe it's follow your dreams or your passion, because this was really what, in the end, I mean, not that I didn't love the music production. I was very much into it, and I still do it when I have some time. I mix some music for people still, and I master some music. But I think just like it's the opposite probably of this tendency right now for everybody to start startups. I mean, everybody has a startup and is just trying to create a company that they can sell 2 years later for $15 billion if possible. And maybe, that might work. It's like gambling, really. For a few people, this might work. But I guess if you have a passion for something, and if you also get some experience with what you do and become good in what you do, then probably that's the best way to go ahead.
To find out more about BrainWorks, go to brainworks-music.de. That's BrainWorks with an X, WORX-music.de. For more on Plugin Alliance, go to plugin-alliance.com. www.thisisinnercircle.com. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, please send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, you can go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or just go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll find a sign-up form for my newsletter for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.